Oh, g'day team. Welcome to another instalment of the U Project. It's Harps, it's Melissa, it's us, it's Davey. He's come up in a second. He's annoyingly good looking, but that's all right. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good, thank you. I'm super excited about this episode, I've got to say, just off the bat.
You may have a little crush, but I'm hashtag just saying, that's all right. I don't blame you. I've got a bit of a crush too. You sent me a video. And I'm like, what's this about? Who's this? I was like the old Muppet up in the fucking, who is this? What is this about? Fucking young upstart. And then I watched his video. I watched young Davey's video, which is amazing. And then I went, well, he is fucking fascinating and clever. So I did a deep dive. But you know what Mary would say about what Davey does? Do you know what Mary would say? That's my mum, Davey. Do you know what she would say?
What would Mary say?
That's not a real job though, is it? Not a real job. Has anyone ever told you, mate, you don't really have a real, it's not a real job though, is it?
Yeah, look, they have. Probably my mum and dad very early on kind of questioned my career, but I think now, yeah, it's kind of becoming pretty standard and well known, which is good.
When I started personal training, my parents, firstly, I left school and started working in gyms. So you can imagine the joy with my parents. Wow, amazing. He's teaching people how to fucking bench press. Our son, the success story, right? And then, and then I went, I'm going to spend all the money that I have in the world, mum and dad, which is not much. And I'm setting up a thing called a personal training center. And they're like, oh, that's not a thing. I'm like, no, it's definitely a thing. They're like, it's not a thing. And so again, you know, we're both pioneers, but you're successful.
Yeah, I have a very similar story, actually. I was doing mining engineering and I was one semester in and I was like, no, I want to be a personal trainer. So I just dropped out and they were on a trip at the time. So they were literally driving around Australia, left me at home. And yeah, I just literally said I dropped out already and didn't really give them any notice. So that they're a little bit worried as well.
And what was, I saw, so is it just your YouTube's just, if people just do David Fogarty, do a search.
Yeah, Davey Fogarty.
Sorry. So have a look at the most recent one that Davey put up. I think it's like 12 minutes, maybe. It's really interesting because it's kind of just a bit of a snapshot of who he is and what he does. But I found it really fascinating. But one of the things that I laughed at was maybe it was your year 12 graduation or something where you got up and the lady was reading out bits and pieces about everyone. David's ambition is to be a billionaire by the time he's 30 or something like that. Everyone else is like, I want to save the world. I want to save endangered species. I want to build air. No, I want to be rich as fuck.
Yeah. Honestly, I can't even remember saying that when my grandpa pulled out the footage. You know, grandpa's always got the camera out, which is really good in hindsight. I had no recollection of saying that. I didn't even know that I was like really that obsessed with business as a whole when I was in year 12, but apparently I was.
What's the attraction for you? And I mean, obviously, I think people who do really well, you get to the point where it's about money initially. And of course, money is always a variable and it's always factored in. And that's the KPI that we use in, obviously, in business for success in some ways. There are other KPIs, of course. But what's the fascination with business and creating business?
Yeah, I think it always starts with the desire of money, you know, flashy things, status goods. But eventually it's trite because every single person that's successful says it doesn't become about the money. It becomes about so much more. And I think mine is always about intellectual curiosity and just wanting to constantly build and grow things and learn and better myself. And I know a lot of other people are also like that are quite successful. So I think that's really the commonality after you achieve money. Mm. I think my first desire of money was pretty, I really just wanted freedom. I hated working 9 to 5, like even in year 11, I was like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. Yeah. So that's really where the desire started. And you know, I still have that desire. But you know, you say you don't want to work 9 to 5 and then you end up working 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. running your own business, which is,
but it's different though. I get you, but it's like you and I are quite similar in that, and my listeners have heard me say this a lot, but by the time I was about 19, 20, so maybe a little bit later than you to the party, but even though I was working in gyms, which I loved, but I thought, I don't want to work for someone for the rest of my life. I don't want to arrive at a time, work a block of hours, and then leave at a designated time and I'm done, and work within this box, work within this structure that I have no say in, and you know, maybe climb my way up to whatever. And it's not bad. It's not a bad model at all. It works for most people, but it didn't work for me mentally or emotionally or creatively, you know. And so I kind of figured, you know, by the time I was 20, I was constantly thinking about, how do I not do this? How do I still work? Like, I want to work. I want to be busy, but I don't want a job, in inverted commas. So what I think is really interesting, I'd like your thoughts on the way that careers and jobs have, you know, you're young, so you can't remember, well, you weren't there, but even in the 60s and 70s and 80s and even 90s, Davey, you know, it felt like there was about 40 jobs in the world, you know, like you're a lawyer, you're a policeman, you work in retail, you're an accountant, you're a firefighter, you're a carpenter, you're a plumber. There's like a lot of, but it's just like a job is almost anything, or work is or producing income now. It's not limited to, in inverted commas, a job, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's technology's role in developing society, you know, just creating so many avenues. People are so scared about automation and AI because it's going to replace jobs. But it's like, what opportunities that does that then create? So I think technology is something to be really excited about. And, you know, to have 14 to 16 year olds being able to just sit at home and, you know, buy media online and sell goods that were previously held by, you know, big multinationals with shelf space. It's like that is what's so exciting. You know, it's now also creating people it's forcing people to celebrate entrepreneurship as well, which is like a complete paradigm shift. You know, before it was risk, it was just too risky to be an entrepreneur. Yet now everyone's supportive of it. And, you know, even the government's trying to get behind it with grants. So I think it's just a really exciting time for careers, and, you know, probably not an exciting time for universities, in my opinion, but yeah. Really exciting for young people getting in the tech space.
Mm. Somebody wrote, you've probably heard this, I was doing a bit of research, and so somebody wrote this about you. I think it was a recent article, which I think you would think is funny. David Fogarty is responsible for perhaps one of Australia's biggest fashion crimes, the polyester jumper blanket hybrid called the Hoodie. I know you get asked a million questions about that, but hilarious. Whoever wrote that, that was funny. More than 3 million sold around the world, aided by plenty of people seeking comfort as they lounge around their homes. The product success has landed Fogarty 27 on this year's Young Rich list with an estimated wealth of 170 million. The Adelaide-based blah, blah, blah. Is it, what's your relationship with the Hoodie now?
Yeah. So Hoodie is my second successful business that I launched under the group, the Davey Group. It's just an e-commerce brand. It's definitely our biggest, you know, it's surpassed probably, you know, my wildest dreams of what it could have ever surpassed. So, you know, we feel incredibly blessed to have a product that customers just love so much. You know, people come back, they shop again. You know, we have amazing reviews. It brings a lot of joy as well. You know, you see adults wearing cartoon characters in their pajamas, and it's just a lot of fun. So, you know, it's a viral product as well, which makes the marketing a little bit easier. You know, we're not complacent though. We understand that, you know, we're going to come up against the big guys, especially this winter, because they're all kind of watching us now. So, you know, we're not complacent. We're working really hard at building the best possible brand, launching new sleepwear, loungewear, going into different categories. So, but yeah, we really do love the brand.
Do you have a method to, it's funny that you stepped away from uni, right? But so much of your life is about research. So do you have a particular research process, or do you just pay attention to what's happening, or and how do you do that? Like, how do you think, where does the idea, this is 20 questions, answer the first one, I'll go with the next one, but do you have a method to how you research and ascertain what might fly?
Yeah, a lot of it, depends what type of entrepreneur you are. A lot of, you know, Steve Jobs types will be able to understand what consumers want before the consumer even knows. They can, they're a visionary. I don't really consider myself to be that. I think that, you know, I failed six businesses before I found a good business. So it's a good clue that maybe my radar for that stuff is maybe off. So what I do is I rely heavily on data. So I built my own internal software that finds trends and looks at them as well and compiles like a lot of retention-based metrics. And, you know, we're getting more sophisticated at looking at the cold, hard facts rather than just kind of guessing. That's kind of my research process previously. Before that was, you know, using a whole bunch of different data sources and compiling them. So yeah, that I definitely do have a process, and that is the difference between a successful launch and a failed launch, in my opinion, is how much you understand about what's going on in the space.
So when you're launching or conceptualizing, Davey, something like the Udi, how much, just as a thing that you're going to potentially create and push out into the world, do you actually get beside the designers and go, no, I want it longer, or I want, like, are you involved in the design of the actual product as well as the big picture launch and marketing and rollout?
100%. Yeah, definitely. Being still really understaffed, I'd like to say, considering our company size, you know, we still have a long way to go to kind of remove myself out of those processes. And I'm a product person. It's just a product and marketing person. You know, I have very little to do with the operations because that's just not my strength. And we have a great COO there, but yeah, I'm heavily involved in the design process still, but that will change. You know, our head of products come in, she's absolutely amazing, far better than me at every part of the process. So slowly I'll step out, you know, we'll kind of push the culture of what we're trying to achieve with, you know, lots of product launches in lots of different niches. And then, I should be able to step out of that in the future.
Tell me about one of those six failures. Tell me about it.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, just give us a snapshot of the dumbest thing you've ever done, son.
I'll go through them rapid fire. I tried to do a gym singlet business, and they were the terrible designs. They're absolutely awful. I tried to do a seasoning business. So I was in my shed grinding up seasonings. That was a disaster. I put them in glass bottles, which just broke. And then I did PT. The funniest one is I launched a Vietnamese roll shop. So I really like pork rolls. So I launched a cafe, very low margin, tough business there. But I was in the kitchen cooking pork rolls. That's probably the worst. I tried to launch a social media positivity as well that like blocked negative comments. But, you know, I was pretty young then. So I don't really know what I was trying to achieve there. But yeah, you know, all of those things were pre kind of this paradigm shift of needing to learn first, you know, it's great to start a business and just jump in. And I'd always recommend that because I wouldn't be here without those failures. But, you know, if I just kind of softened my failures through learning first and understanding what I was kind of trying to achieve and talking to more people, it would have been a much easier journey, I think. So, it's a balancing act.
But I think also like fucking up and getting up is the deal, right? Like you can't become a black belt without being a white belt at the start. You know, you're not good at stuff, and then you do stuff and you get better at the stuff, and you fall down and get up and fail and learn and build resilience and awareness and insight and understanding and skill. And then you're you now. And in 5 years, you'll look back and you'll think, how much didn't I know 5 years ago? You know, because you're apart from the fact that your business is evolving, in the middle of all of that, you're evolving, you know, and that's the ongoing, that's the beauty of success and failure. Eventually they're all lessons of some kind.
That's just it. And in reflection, looking back, it's very easy to see. Looking forward, it's very hard to see. And that's, as you know, what creates imposter syndrome. It kind of makes you feel like, you know, you got kind of lucky and now you're in a situation that you can't kind of handle. And I think remembering that, you know, you've always managed to overcome those problems, and through pure learning and accepting where you don't know something, is just how I have overcome that, and how I plan to keep overcoming it.
Mm. Do you ever feel like a fraud these days?
I think definitely. I have always had it. I think it's less so about the situation that you get put in. I'm not 100% certain on this, but I think it's less so about the situation you're put in, but more so about the person. They're always going to feel it, no matter kind of, providing they're making progress, of course, what they deem as progress, you're going to feel that imposter syndrome. And, you know, I've always had it. I think I'm getting maybe better at it the more reps that I get in. And I'm also just maybe like caring less a little bit about that whole situation. It's like, there's a task at hand, like, let's do it. And just getting out of my head a little bit more, just being a little bit more mindful about the situation as well has helped.
I have a theory. I reckon that being a bit insecure and having a bit of self-doubt, not being overwhelmed by it, but a bit of self-doubt, a bit insecurity, I think it's good because I think it keeps us grounded. Like, I still have that and I'm 58 and I've done some good things and I've gone okay, but I still don't think a lot of me. I don't hate me, but I don't think I'm awesome, you know, and there's that, it's always hanging around. It doesn't overwhelm me, but it's just there keeping me mindful that I'm not that special. And knowing that I'm not that special or gifted keeps me more inspired and motivated to do the work.
Yeah. I think if your goal is progress, then just being slightly unsettled in that regard is great. I think if your goal is maybe peace or happiness, and this is something that I've been battling with a lot. It's like, if you want to be at peace and happy with your current situation, you can't have those feelings. You know, and this is the constant battle of an entrepreneur that believes in philosophy and enjoys that kind of stuff is like, what is even the point? I think that we often as entrepreneurs feel very fulfilled through the progress and the learning as well. So it really is just that balancing act, which I'm also figuring out. But I do love what I do, which is also one of the main things, I guess.
I think too, Davey, it's for me, like a lot of people, I work with quite a few entrepreneurs and athletes and, you know, it's the juggling, the what's happening in my external world, situation, circumstance, environment, humans, turnover, KPIs, business, brand, all that external stuff. And then the internal thoughts, feelings, emotions, sadness, joy, happiness, contentment, calm, nirvana, you know, thinking about thinking, metacognition, equanimity, being able to be the calm in the chaos. Have you heard of that term, equanimity?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, is being able to just self-navigate. And also, I think you can still be calm and relaxed knowing that you're flawed. It's all right. As you go, yeah, that's okay. And I'm not, I don't know everything. And I'm going to fail at things. And by the way, that's all okay too. So, I think the duality of the human experience is navigating my external world and managing my internal world, which is because you and I both know, as does Melissa, as do all of our listeners, people who are really successful from the outside looking in, but their actual day-to-day experience is anxiety and overthinking and self-doubt and a bit of self-loathing and lack of sleep and sadness, you know. So if you're making $1 zillion, but you know, you're miserable, then maybe we might not call that successful. So I reckon that's the ongoing challenge for all of us, is trying to balance what's happening without and within.
Yeah, definitely. I think the main tricks that I have for that is, you know, not trying to control what you can't control.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things you can control, like in the external and in the internal, of course, once you understand how to do that, you know, that takes practice. Yeah. It's a skill in itself, but that's a really big one. And then, you know, I try to not get attached to things. And part of that comes down to the control as well, because, you know, it's, there's no point getting attached to something. It's just going to create, you know, a contract with yourself to be unhappy until you basically achieve that. And then you achieve it and you try to jump to other things. So just trying to enjoy the ride a little bit more is something that I've been working on. And, you know, it's made me a much better entrepreneur as well. You know, when all hell breaks loose and you just kind of, you know, you break things down better, you compartmentalize and you just tick things off.
Mm. managing in the mayhem. I'm sure you've heard of Kevin Systrom, who created, he was one of the two creators of Instagram.
Not familiar. I do know they're the founders of Instagram, but yeah.
Anyway, so he was one of the, well, he was actually way before you kind of, so he sold, I think they sold, I know they sold to Facebook for $1 billion. And I was listening to him talk this morning to a guy called Lex Friedman, who's got a really good podcast. And he was also 27 when he sold, I thought this was amazing. He sold Instagram for $1 billion and they had 13 employees. Did you know that, Melissa?
No.
How weird is that? So 13 employees, $1 billion. And he, like, after he did that, he, like, because obviously he didn't ever need to work, but that wasn't his plan to not ever work again. But he said a lot of people who have these amazing things happen, then they're depressed. And he was a bit flat because he's like, oh, well, I've peaked at 27. What do I do now? So it's an interesting thing, the story, Davey, that we have about success and the story that we have about money. It's all different. It's different for different people. But, and then you, I bet, like in your wildest dreams, although you had aspirations, of course, but you, or maybe you did, but did you think that you'd have a multi-million dollar turnover business and be in the situation that you are relatively not that long out of school?
Yeah, there was kind of no doubt in my mind, to be honest. Maybe that was naive. Maybe that was... Yeah,
no, it's good though. I like that you had that. Fuck, I wish.
Well, I said it at my year 12 graduation. So I guess, it was always kind of, you know, why I wanted it, I didn't understand. I think that it was just vain why I wanted it, but I always knew that I was going to achieve something successful. My whole thing is, you know, it's like a buy-in that you want to change the world, and a lot of, you know, I guess a lot of people get to a point where they're like, why am I even trying to do that? I still have that desire. I think that I can create a lot of good in the world. I think that people with the means and the means to create that change have a duty to actually do that as well. So yeah, I've always enjoyed my position, and I'm excited to do something like that.
I reckon that there's like never been less barriers to entry to start your own business. Do you know what I mean? Like back in the day when you had that bricks and mortar business and you had to have staff and products and, you know, shelves filled with things. And these days, you know, you can, doesn't mean it's going to succeed, of course, but you can create an online business relatively, you know, not easily, but I mean, it depends what it is. Yeah, you can. You can create an online business quite quickly and quite easily. Whether or not it'll work is another thing. But we've got more options now to explore that than we ever had, right?
Yeah, 100%. Less barriers of entry and more leverage as well. So leverage through code to engage more audiences, which is an amazing combination. And it's a combination that favors, you know, younger people as well, because they're more tech savvy. So it is like this really interesting shift in the ability to create businesses that really can't be ignored in a lot of ways.
Who inspires you, Davey? Like, who do you look up to, whether or not it's in the tech space or the kind of entrepreneurial space, or maybe it's somebody more philosophical?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I look up to people in certain ways. And I think that's really important because, you know, if you look at someone and you're like, I want their life, you've got to take all the bad as well. So I think you've got to pick the features of people that you really aspire to be, or aspire to create change in your own life. So, like Warren Buffett and his frugality is really important. Elon Musk and like his vision and ability to, you know, change the world in a positive way. There's plenty of others as well. Like Naval, he's got an amazing podcast. He talks about, you know, happiness, and he's an investor as well. So it's really interesting to hear his balance between, you know, wealth, but also happiness as well. So yeah, all of those kind of people.
So what happened with the PT thing? You hung up the barbell?
Yeah, I just do it for fun now. It's interesting. I think the book is The E-Myth, where it talks about how you go into the the niche that you love the most, and then you're doing everything but like enjoying the niche anymore. So that was kind of the same situation, and almost photography as well. I got into photography and then I started doing it for a living. So yeah, I just try to do those things for fun now.
And can you give us a bit of an insight into, and I know in that video, everyone, if you have a look at that, but give us a snapshot, and I know it varies, but, and there's no typical day, but a close to typical day for you. What time do you get up? What time do you go to bed? Are you a health freak? Do you train every day? Do you never train? Do you live on bloody yak milk and alfalfa? What's the deal?
Yeah, I have a pretty relaxed approach to most of my life, because in that, you know, if I have too much of a strict regime, it's going to really cause me stress. So I don't really want that. But at the same time, I try to create consistency, because consistency is so important for entrepreneurs. So I'll wake up, you know, 5 o'clock-ish, and then, you know, just meditate and, you know, have breakfast, try to relax a little bit. And then, you know, I'll go for a pretty long walk with the dog. Then we'll get into meetings at around, you know, 7 o'clock-ish, 7:30-ish. That'll go to about 5. I'm pretty useless after 5. But, you know, obviously if something's on, I will keep working until, you know, 9 o'clock-ish, and just, you know, power through and get that task done. Then, you know, I also, yeah, just go to the gym for an hour or so as well at the end of the day to finish off. And I just make sure that whenever I'm doing something that I'm not working directly, where I need to, you know, be writing stuff down, I'm listening to audiobooks or podcasts that whole time, driving or walking or training. I'm always just trying to learn as well.
And when I said earlier that Melissa may have had a crush on you, it may also be on Sherlock Bones, because she was equally excited about the dog as you, I'm sorry to say. Where is the aforementioned hairy four-legged business partner?
He's actually downstairs at the moment. He's been banned from podcasts because he likes to come up to my ears and kind of like chew while I'm trying to speak to people. So yeah, when recording, he's kind of been sentenced downstairs.
Well, Melissa's sad face is now on. Tell us about the kind of the balance, Davey, when we're creating something like the original thought in the head to the product or service being wheeled out to the public. How much of that is strategic and how much of that is creative?
It's a good question. I think, look, if I have to apply a ratio, it would probably be 70% strategic, 30% creative. And that's for our business model. I would say that, you know, a lot of other business models that are far more innovative would be a different ratio.
Mm. What do you like as a leader?
It's something that I've really struggled with, I would say. Maybe you would have to ask my team. I do ask my team a fair bit, you know, I'm trying to get a lot of feedback from them, because being so young and never actually working in a big company, I never really understood how to structure things, how to inspire people, how to remain positive under stress, how to actually also express, you know, radical candor as well to provide feedback, because you can't always just be happy. Mm. So they're all the things that, you know, I've been learning as a leader. And again, just doing my standard process, as we touched on before with the imposter syndrome side of things, like you just got to learn. So there's a lot of books out there that are written by really great CEOs. So I'm just trying to learn and as we go, become a better leader for the group, because I do see it as my main kind of job right now, and I don't want to let anyone down there.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, want it or not, like it or not, people look to you because you're the captain of the ship, dude. Do you ever have a day off or 2 days off? No phone, no tech, no planning, no meetings, no... Do you ever have total time off?
It's hard when we're doing YouTube as well. Like I do a YouTube on Saturday or Sunday, just because I don't want to add more work to my life. It is difficult. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll switch off on a Sunday and try to relax a little bit, but always trying to read and whatnot.
You know, we were talking about this thing recently on the show, and we went into a deep dive, Davey, on we talk about in business for a long time anyway, we've spoken about work-life balance, right? And I'm a corporate speaker, and so people would, and it, to me, it was always a bit bullshitty because the kind of thinking around work-life balance was that if you get a certain amount of work and a certain amount of non-work hours, it's almost like this formula of hours versus hours. And if you get the right metric or algorithm, then you're going to have balance and the world will be good, right? Which is bullshit because you might have a job of 20 hours a week that you fucking hate and it's toxic and destructive and it gives you anxiety and you can't sleep. Or you might be like you and work 1400 hours a week and love what you do. Or you might work 100 hours a week, not that we'd recommend it, or 80 or 90 or 70 hours. But in those hours, for the most part, you're excited and stimulated and you're growing and learning and you're connecting with people that you like. And, you know, so I think that, and also there's a, you know, there's a time, I think there's a time when, you know, like you're in your 20s or 30s when you can kind of go nuts, you know, as long as there's a bit of balance, but you can go nuts and work a million hours and cause you're almost at your creative and physiological peak, you know, in terms of energy and ideas. And so you can do a lot more, but, you know, I think it's not really a question here, but I just think that if what you're doing works for you, then that's what you should do. Cause there's no three-step plan for anything that works globally for everyone.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of studies starting to come out about it. And I totally agree that there's no blanket rule for it. I think I try to find consistency in my week, which I kind of described before, but that consistency goes out the window because I feel like sometimes when you just want to do a sprint, you know, when you're peak motivated, you have the purpose, you can see that you can achieve it. There's a deadline. I think, you know, working in those sprints as an entrepreneur and embracing them is really important. You know, switch off distractions, you know, don't drink alcohol, like all of those kind of things, you know, because that's where, you know, the money is really made because you're getting past people. And then you find that consistency, that balance so you don't burn out and then you go again, you know, and you just become better at that. Your sprints become longer. Your, you know, balance week also becomes more efficient. So yeah, I think that that's the way to go. And you just, yeah, get the reps in and you become more efficient.
Are you the idea machine within the organization or is there somebody else as well?
Our team's amazing. I'm not everything in any regard, throughout the company. You know, we've got amazing people creating ideas in every single department and implementing them. So, you know, if you ask me maybe a year and a half ago, it would be mostly myself. But, you know, now we've hired amazing people and they're taking the reins there.
What are your, when you're looking for people, are you, how much of whether or not you hire them is about CV, skills, qualifications, I don't know, references, and how much is about you seeing in front of a human going, I don't know, something tells me this person's great. Like how much is intuitive and how much is, you know, cerebral?
I think it really, again, it depends. For us, because being a startup, we have a lack of processes. We have a lack of experience throughout the company in certain places we need to grow. So we are heavily looking at the CV. How do you achieve what we're trying to achieve? Can you implement and hire underneath you and put those processes in place? So we're looking for an experienced manager in the most part. Now we're hiring people underneath. Now we might start going and, you know, providing we have the right leaders in place, which we do, they can put the processes in place. So now we're starting to look at more, you know, attitude. Can you do the, can you get into the nitty gritty? Can we throw you into the deep end in certain situations? And so it really does depend in what kind of role you're hiring for. I personally, I don't think that I'm, again, this is like, I don't have the reps in. I don't think I'm the best judge of character at this stage. So that's where I really do rely on my experienced managers as well. I probably would never really have the final say in hiring someone right now. Yeah. I would always get a second opinion. And I try to do that with all big decisions. Like I just think that that's really important because by bouncing off ideas, you know, whether you probably still go ahead with it, but at least you can build a bit of a hypothesis around what you're thinking, document it, and then fact check it at a later date. And I think people is a perfect example of that. Why did I like this person? What had they done previously? Did they work out? Yes or no? And you can start building a bit of a mental model around it.
I feel like I could be wrong with this, but tell me what you think. I feel like you're essentially an introvert doing extrovert stuff.
You bang on the money. It's been really challenging. So when I first thought about doing my YouTube, it was actually a mental hurdle that I wanted to get over more so than anything else. I was like, I literally cannot sit in front of a camera. I can't do public speaking. I have panic attacks. So I was just like, look, I'm not going to live my life like this. So then I was just like, I just hired a videographer from Melbourne, flew him over and threw myself in the deep end for that. And, you know, first episode we scratched. It was terrible. It was so bad. Then we decided teleprompter, this could work. So that was the first episode we aired. And now, you know, we just do dot points and I can do it. You know, I'm still not good at public speaking. I still can't do it, which, you know, is something that I'm going to courses for again, trying to learn. Because, you know, as a leader, you know, stand up in front of your team, present the information and aspire confidence. It's really important. So definitely introverted, and trying to, you know, still be a good leader in that regard. And I don't think I'm alone. Like, I think that there's a fair few CEOs, especially in the tech space, that are, you know, introverted and need to force themselves into those situations. And part of that is, you know, resting and rejuvenating after a long day of extroverted work, so that you have the energy to go again.
Now, as somebody who's been talking to audiences for a job for 30 years, my advice that you didn't ask for, mate, don't get too polished, because I love how you are. Like, the fact that you, like, to me, because I study people, right? And the fact that you are overwhelmingly humble and real, and maybe even sometimes a little bit clunky, not to the, but you know how you feel, oh fuck, this is not my thing. This is not my lane. Even you telling that to people, even you sharing that, makes you more appealing. Like, I think I would, yeah, sure, develop skills, get more comfortable, all of that, but still be you. You know, it's like, I tell people all the time, I'm Captain Mediocre. I'm not brilliant in anything, but I work hard. I've got a good attitude. I fuck up, I'll take risks. Some things work, some don't. And you know, you yourself said the most appealing thing about you so far was I failed six times. Not the most, but I love that, because you're not, there's no ego. But nonetheless, you're a high performer, you're a high achiever, you're doing great stuff. And I think that you staying grounded and even in front of your team, you know, you don't have to get up there and become some model of inspirational leader that you think you should be, because, like, you're enough. You know, I know you didn't need that advice, but, mate, you really, like, your humility and your authenticity makes you very likable. And even when I was watching that video of you, I went, this dude's a really good dude. And he's even, like, you did it really well. All your stuff is really good. But I can see that it's not your natural habitat. It's a thing that you've got to do as part of the process that you're in.
No, I appreciate that. Appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I definitely feel that. I think the main thing is communication, and just being able to communicate, whether you just can't let the let's call it introverted nature, you could call it anxiety or whatever, get in the way of the communication for your team. I think that's really important. You know, aspiring confidence and clearly communicate instructions. So I just want to make sure those boxes are ticked. But you know, I you know, want to keep my values, no matter what I'm doing in life. And those values is to remain humble and feel very blessed about the situation that I'm in.
Well, mate, we're going to let you go, because you've got 1 million people to inspire and 1 million things to do, but, yeah, it's been really nice getting to know you a little bit and hearing about your journey. And, you know, you are an inspiration, whether or not you're trying to inspire others, but you inspire me, and I'm 400 years old. So we appreciate you being on the You Project, and thanks. How do people find you, follow you? Tell us about your socials and your website, if you have one, and your YouTube channel.
Sure. I haven't got around to the website yet, which is ironic, but YouTube channel, Davey Fogarty, or Instagram, Davey Fogarty. I'm sitting there.
Cool. Stay on the call for one sec, mate. We'll say goodbye to you off air. Melissa, what did you think?
Oh, I loved that. That was awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, Davey. Really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. Love you guts. See you next time.